Quit laughing.
I'm trying.
Welcome to Gola. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer, culinary guide, and cookbook author.
And I'm Danielle Caligari, an assistant professor in Italian at Dartmouth College and a certified specialist of wine.
Hello, Danielle. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well, Katie. We just ate a late afternoon taco at a safe distance outside. I'm feeling full and kind of like I might need an after lunch nap, but I know that I'm going to get re-energized as soon as we launch into our amazing new episode.
I don't know. If you're full now, we're going to get into dangerous territory discussing today's pod topic. I'm excited for this one.
I am too, because I actually have begun to really like our more thematic episodes rather than our single ingredient ones. I like them all for different reasons, but I feel like we wander off on these in ways that is probably kind of annoying to our audience, but is delightful to me.
Strongly disagree. Everyone likes a good long ramble.
Well, you know, I'm always delivering on a ramble. So speaking of, we are talking today about the structure of an Italian meal. And, you know, this is something that a lot of our listeners will be familiar with if they have traveled to Italy. But if you haven't, it's probably something that you don't know that much about. And I think it's worth talking about because it is one of those things that just kind of seems like, you know, cultural quirk, a weird little detail. And then, in fact, ends up being really kind of revelatory in a way.
It's true. So for those who have been to Italy, for those who are planning to, we're talking about the whole shebang here, the parade of dishes that form a full-fledged Italian meal. And note that we're not saying Roman meal or Venetian meal or Neapolitan meal. In this case, we've got something that really encapsulates encapsulated in the national identity, a multi-course meal in which, if you're really going hard, you're starting with an antipasto that will be followed by a primo, which is a starch course. Could be polenta, but usually it's not. Pasta, risotto to a lesser extent. Then you got your protein, meat or fish. Then your vegetable side, called your contorno. Then your dolce. There's wine in the mix. There's amaro to digest. Well, coffee first, then amaro. So really, a lot of things. A lot of things going on, served in often individually, one at a time, rarely sharing space on a plate, perhaps with the exception of like meat and potatoes are served together, for example, at times, but not always. But what's, I think, really fun and exciting about, you know, talking about this is we're talking about something that was kind of synonymous with dining in Italy for decades. It's changed a bit, but for millennia, people didn't necessarily always eat in the same exact way. And it does cut through a lot of elements of ancient culture, medieval culture, court, sort of like wealthy court culture, but we can't experience any of those really today. What we can talk about is what you encounter when you eat a meal in Italy and are confronted with a menu that is structured, as I mentioned before, antipasto, primo, secondo, contorno, dolce, caffè amaro.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would normally take this opportunity to do the deep dive into history and walk us from ancient back to contemporary. But in this case, I kind of feel like it's better for us or more useful to start with what you all encounter today as you're transitioning us into, Katie, and then, you know, think about how that attaches to a deeper history and at times is totally kind of, you know, sui generis and not part of that at all. I say that also because, you know, it is something that is a kind of like hardline cultural difference. The distinction among the courses and the insistence on having multiple in order to have a complete meal, and especially that apparently small detail that you mentioned, Katie, but that's a really, you know, a very, very specific and important difference. The no mixing of foods on the plate is a thing that I think if you're coming from somewhere else, this is totally foreign in a way that lots of other Italian things, especially when it comes to food, aren't. So you're not going to be shocked to find that there is pasta on the menu at a restaurant when you get to Italy, but you may not have any idea why it appears where it does and how to order in a way that actually fits the structure of the meal, as you're saying. Speaking of, you said, Katie, a primo is your starch. That's where pasta appears in the meal. It does not have the place of honor as it would in a fancy or even, you know, regular chain Italian restaurant in the U.S. We've just been talking about fettuccine Alfredo. If you go to an Italian restaurant in America, you get fettuccine Alfredo or fettuccine Alfredo there. And that's basically it. That's your whole meal. In Italy, that would never be the case. And in fact, having just one plate in Italy is often a way people, or I should say, if you have just one plate in Italy, people will not even refer to that as a meal. They'll call it, you know, just some kind of an in-between, as something that sort of held them over until they can, you know, properly sit down and have courses that represent a meal.
Yeah. I mean, even if you visit a dietitian and are on a restrictive diet, your prescribed meals will still have your starter, antipasto, some sort of like primo, some sort of secondo. You're not just picking one and having a salad. Although I will say, when we're talking about the structure of Italian meals, we're talking about people going to a trattoria, a restaurant, even an osteria, although those are sort of few and far between these days. You can go out like to a cafe or bar and have an insalatona, a big salad for lunch. Like that is definitely a thing. It's consumed like by people who need to have a quick lunch. Having a limited amount of food for a meal is associated with not dieting, but with the amount of time you have to dedicate and your budget, of course. And I would also signal to listeners, especially who are familiar with the family style Italian American meal, that is not really that's not an Italian tradition at all. It's very rare that even when you go out with like a lot of friends, you go out and you each order your own dish. Side note, you can now like split a pasta. This is all like the past decade when dining habits have changed due to economic features, but we're talking about that like post-war to, let's say, early aughts, really strictly enforced multi-course meal.
Yeah, exactly. And when you go to a place that still kind of runs it in the more traditional fashion, you'll notice that portion size matches the understanding that you're going to have multiple portate, as they say in Italian, multiple courses. If you order a plate of pasta, it's never going to be more than the 70 grams maximum, and often even a little bit less than that, because the understanding is next you'll move on to a protein of some kind, following which you'll enjoy a salad. We'll get back to that important distinction between when salad is served here in a U.S. or Anglo context versus an Italian, and then also probably linger over some fruit, some nuts, other things at the end. So all of these things kind of first of all, obviously punctuate in a temporal fashion, as you already mentioned, Katie, but also change the relationship with each of those components, because the understanding of how you eat them, when you eat them, how much of them you eat is all changed by their role within this larger meal, as opposed to sort of being a center stage piece themselves. You're talking about family style versus individual plating, and that is really the big difference here when it comes to the longer history also, because what, you know, when we think about court culture and the centuries between about the 1500s up until today, we can see that courses were always part of the way that Italians ate. But the kind of this ultra codification that happened or that is now visible is really something that's tied more closely to Italian identity than many of the other more regional or kind of oscillating aspects of Italian cuisine that we talk about. Because service in terms of the structure and the style of dining on the peninsula up until the 19th century was mostly dictated by what royal or aristocratic culture was most closely influencing the space you're in. So if you're in Naples, you're seeing people who are doing things in a kind of French into Spanish, or rather Spanish into French, continental style of cuisine through the Bourbons. You see people in the Northeast doing things in an Austro-Hungarian style. You see, according to their kind of imperial influence there, et cetera, et cetera. When Italy unites and becomes a kingdom of its own and then later a republic, it has a moment in which it sort of, at least to some limited extent, expels a lot of that influence and needs to reconstruct the Italian meal according to the principles of the people who live in that place. And that kind of puts us on the road toward the horsed out meal as we have it today. And as you already emphasize for us, Katie, is something that is truly pan-Italian, unlike the things that will appear in each of those spaces. So the antipasto that you'll have in Milan is different from the one that you'll have in Naples, but they will both have a menu that progresses in the same way. And anyone eating a full meal there in a formal or semi-formal atmosphere will expect all those things to appear.
Absolutely. I'm curious if it's a pan-Italian thing that emerges in the mid-20th century. I would imagine that peasant dining, which would have been the dominant form of food consumption until the 1960s, didn't need much indoctrination into a new way to eat. People were leaving the country and mountains and going to the city and would have assimilated. But do we have any sense of how city people sort of adapt this? Is it really communicated through restaurant culture? Is it something that sort of propaganda was necessary in order to get people on board? Do we have any idea of what's going on there?
Well, I think, you know, most people would point you towards menus and the, you know, the ability, because when it comes to studying food, particularly the foods that were actually eaten and the ways in which they were eaten, you know, that's the kind of, it's both the fun thing and the frustrating thing. The food isn't there anymore for us. So we can't go back and unearth the courses as they were unfolded at a certain time and then see it again and again and again. What we can do is see what people wrote down or talked about, the kinds of service items and utensils that they used, and then the dining spaces they were in. And dining space is also an element there. So menus codify that for us, and we can see in as people begin to go out to restaurants more, as a kind of burgeoning middle class and working class who are no longer close to their families have to dine out and are, you know, developing a way to have a meal and to all kind of share a similar sense of how that meal should unfold. Alongside that is the movement away from the home dining room that was either in that case going to be very firmly divided between the few houses with a professional staff and the ability to host and stage a full dinner with many courses, oftentimes in that case, a multi-course meal that within each course has multiple courses, and then versus a more working class or middle to lower class home kitchen that would have had a single individual, usually the female companion, managing the kitchen and pantry, and then putting together meals that were more practical and that responded more to availability and to the timing of your life in terms of a family that needs to go out to work and school. What we see today, as you say, Katie, is this, you know, outline that's really straightforward in a lot of ways, but that reads as kind of impenetrable to anyone who's coming from the outside. So, you know, what do you think in terms of the why behind these things? I would say there are plenty of kind of historical and even sort of scientific or pseudoscientific reasons for the structure of the meal that we can talk about. But before then, I feel like it's worth kind of just speculating a little bit based on experience about why Italians have stuck so firmly to this and why it's the one thing that, speaking of, as you travel up and down the peninsula, you can always find.
I think that there has long been a concept of consuming either food and beverage to open the stomach, aperitivo, that like starter course is supposed to get you more hungry. The pasta, which was not a universal food for Italians until the 20th century, becomes a symbol of a common food background, and it also is a calorie source. meat and fish, which were luxury items before the Second World War for most, at least to consume in multiple ounce portions, is symbolic of like wealth, growing middle class, and then the vegetables for digestion. The Amaro as well. The coffee, which comes before the Amaro, a ritual established in the 1930s that has been fully adopted and is one of the many things like the multi-course menu that people think is has always been a part of Italian culture, but is relatively new.
Yeah, I think you're right. As you're outlining it, I can see where we can kind of inject some of this sort of both ends sort of problematic historical anchoring or scientific anchoring for different reasons, but that kind of inform how this was created and then how it was cemented. The antipasto, as you say, the opening of the stomach. Often dinner is also even has a pre-antipasto moment with the aperitivo, which we've talked about a lot here. And that has kind of morphed into its own animal outside of the meal as well at this point.
I would just also add to that, the aperitivo, which is popular in Venice and Padova and Milano and Torino, like those are pretty wealthy cities where you can afford that pre-antipasto with the accompanying beverage.
Right, exactly. Yes. But both of those elements, so either the first very small course or the kind of proper aperitivo, are being introduced with the understanding that one opens the stomach. You don't just sit down and eat the main course. It would be too much. You kind of whet the appetite and move slowly into the next things that your body needs. And then that's where we might start to see some of the kind of dietary science or nutritional theory that is often is grounded in relevant and valid thinking, but that sometimes is sort of spun out into just kind of matching what people's suspicions are about food and how it works. But the idea that you would have a first course of some kind to open up the stomach, then you would move into your starch before laying the groundwork then for the more substantial protein. And then most importantly, having your vegetables and any salad, most of all, at the very end of the kind of main part of the meal, is all drawing back to one of the most ancient principles of dietary science laid out by the early Greek and then later adopted by, oh, I shouldn't even say Greek, even before that, Near Eastern philosophers who speculated on how diet affected the body and the mind, and into Hellenistic and into Roman, and from there, they all coming with this understanding that the vegetables allowed your body to process all the other things that were there before it, and that on bizarrely enough also that vegetables eaten alone with nothing else would be dangerous, that they would be too cold and damp usually to nourish your body properly, if not having had already consumed other kinds of food. And then you have, of course, the economic principles that you're talking about, Katie. So, you know, what's happening in terms of how the meal is structured and how much money people have?
I think we can talk about sort of segments of Italian economic history that food is a mirror of, or the way that people eat and consume is a mirror of. And we have that, like the birth of the middle class, the industrialization and urbanization of Italy of the mid to late 20th century into the early aughts, and then a traumatic economic crisis, which continues to this day, that creates other needs, creates a necessity for cheaper dining or a different way of dining. And we've talked about this in other pods. The trattoria meal or the ristorante meal might be the one that most visitors encounter because it's the one that's documented in guidebooks and websites and whatnot. But there are so many other ways to eat. And when Italians want to have a cheap meal, they'll go to a pizzeria. When they want to have a cheap meal at dinner, that is. When they want to have a cheap meal at lunch, they'll go to a pizzeria al taglio. So those are actually two different beings. Or they'll go to a forno, a bakery that serves sandwiches, or a tavola calda, that's kind of like a cafeteria. So there are other ways to consume. And because of the economic needs of Italians who see their disposable incomes diminishing, who see the buoni that might be part of your work contract vanishing. The buoni would be like the little coupons you can use to exchange for food at cafes or even supermarkets. Those are less and less common. So people still want to go out, still want to be entertained, still want to have fun, and aren't ready to give up their trattoria meals. And I remember distinctly during the financial crisis, now 11 years ago, many of my friends who own trattorie were just lamenting that they couldn't fill their tables. And they reacted in a way that is natural for Italians. They got creative, they changed things up. And rather than charging, you know, 10 euros for 70 grams of pasta, they charge 11 euros for 150 grams of pasta. So introducing that more bang for your euro buck, is there an Italian analog to that? More bang for your euro. Euro. You stay true to the structure of the meal that people expect when they go to a trattoria, but you give them more, and quantity is a very powerful tool in Italian food marketing. It's not just in America where you get served a huge bucket of pasta any longer. Meanwhile, meat dishes have become really even more prestigious than they were before, because it's less and less often that most are able to go out and have meat or fish in particular, which is a very expensive luxury in many parts of the country.
Yeah. That's exactly why I pointed that question to you, Katie, because I know that you're often making sure that people who are dining with you are taking note of the fact that the traditional way of eating in Italy and what you're being served right now may not always match up, because people will frequently, and I think this comes probably weirdly, even kind of increasingly emphasized by not only pop culture, but also kind of pop science, the idea that Italians can just like eat so much and stay in great shape and be really healthy. And the fact is that if you are following that kind of original scheme of very small, even, or a better word maybe, is contained portions of multiple things, of all the things that your body needs, starting with the carbohydrates and sugars and moving into the proteins and fats, and then concluding also with another sugar component, usually in the form of fruit at the end, you have a meal that is literally the mosaic of nutrition that your body needs, and that it comes together in a total amount of calories that is ultimately pretty low, as opposed to the kind of swapping out of some of those components for simply lots of calories that fill one up without delivering what is necessary for the body to function well. I would also say that at this point, one of the things that is being lost altogether is this structure of the meal as you go out because of those things. But the memory of it seems so powerful that it won't be eroded despite the way people actually eat. So as you're pointing out, especially young people now, it's pretty rare that they sit down for a proper meal from, as we still say in English, following the continental adage, soup to nuts. So with the multiple structures from beginning to end, but rather with the multiple parts of the structure from beginning to end. But the expectation is still there, and the way that people refer to the meal is still there. And it still comes along with this idea of sitting down and letting something unfold slowly, which I do think is where things started in Italy and where things sort of maintain their identity, right? I mean, there's something that's just profoundly different about the way people sit down and give attention to food in Italy versus the way it happens in the US, for me still.
Oh, absolutely. There's no anxiety and intensity to like, get me the menu, get my order in, get me the check. It's a social event. It's a way to be with people, exchange ideas, spend time. And it's meant to be slow and patient, sometimes so slow and requiring so much patience, especially as I advance in years. And I'm like, I just had like carbonara and oxtail and tiramisu and like a lot of wine. And like, if I don't go to sleep in 10 minutes, like it's going to be a problem. Get me the check.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, there are times where I'm like, I love everyone here. I'm having a great time, but I really need to go. I'm going to fall asleep in my plate.
It's at a bedtime now.
Exactly. But that's, you know, I think that's what brought us to talk about the, you know, the structure in the first place. Again, you know, people will have heard of it or experienced it. And there are parts of it that are historical and parts of it that are being eroded right now. And then there are parts of it that are still present with us. But it's the, there's an underpinning there, an idea about how to feel comfortable and confident in a dining space and use it to do something that simply consuming calories for the sake of keeping yourself alive, it can't express or it can't bring, deliver to you in the same way. And we always have, I'm sure we've said this before on the pod, and we say it to each other, the Italian quirk of saying, I didn't have lunch today, when they get home from work, if they didn't sit down and have at least 2 to 3 courses. If they had a sandwich or a salad or something like that, you'll say, non ho pranzato.
Ma come non hai pranzato? Ti ho visto mangiare pizza con la mortazza. Che cazzo stai a dire?
Exactly. If you're in Rome, if you're at Katie's house, that's definitely what the response is. But
she's so elegant. That's all. This, she's so elegant. Her Italian is so refined. Wow.
Listen, you can... take the Romana out of Roma, but you can't take the Romanaccia out of the Romana. I think the joke there, though, is, you know, kind of obscures the fact that the understanding of that structure of the meal becomes something that gives you a totally different meaning to all the food and the dining experience as a whole. And that's really what I think we're trying to get at here, and that makes this worth reflecting on. When we eat everything all in one plate, mixed together sort of at random, not necessarily taking a moment to consider how it's best presented, how it pairs with the other things on the table, how quickly we're finishing with respect to the others at the table, we're also losing this kind of sense of what a meal is. In Italian, it's not the actual food, and it's greater than the sum of its parts. It's an experience, even when you're just at a very informal local place. And it's hard to recapture that. It's something that I try to do, but it's so funny because even though I spend, you know, at this point, I've spent half my adult life in Italy, and I continue to, except in pandemic years, spend, you know, several months a year there. And while I'm there, I eat this way 100% of the time. And yet I come back to wherever I'm living in the US at that time. And I just switch without any real thought to it back into an American style of dining. I won't course things out. I won't put things, you know, if I'm doing a formal meal with guests coming over, sure. But I won't. I'll sometimes make something quick and then realize later that I didn't make myself a salad and just like be too tired and not bother with it. Something I would never do in Italy. It would just feel so uncouth and sort of honestly depressing. You know,
risky. How will you do that?
Risky. Exactly. Yes. Right. I mean, it's funny. What about you? I mean, what happens in your code switching in that sense?
I mean, there are very few times that I can convince anyone to spend 3 hours with me at lunch in America. The only way I can get people to spend 3 hours eating with me is if I trick them into doing a food crawl. But the idea of yes. reproducing the duration and intensity of like a Roman style lunch here in the US doesn't happen. I mean, definitely if I'm with friends who are chefs, especially have spent time in Europe, like they're a little bit more open to a longer meal. This is kind of a moot point now that we can't go out to restaurants, but yeah, just like, especially, you know, because I spend so much time in the industry, I've spent my whole life in the restaurant industry. Like I'm very also aware of not spending too much time at the table, like allowing that table to get turned when I'm here. And it's not an issue in most cases in Italy. We brought this up in our pandemic pod, but a lot of places, in order to like just make things work economically, have started to introduce seatings. So you're given an hour and a half for your meal at the table. This kind of implies that you're not going to be eating every single course, and it implies that you will be asked to, you know, leave your table, or that the check might get dropped if you're overstaying your welcome. So that's another shift in the post-pandemic fallout as it regards the way that we eat and drink in Italy. That remains to be seen, but I can't imagine that there won't be some long lasting impact on that part. And additionally, the fact that today restaurants can stay open until 5 or 6 p.m. and then have to close, so aren't even open for dinner service, but do stay open for delivery service. The things that people choose to have delivered or to pick up to take away may, you know, the number of dishes may, I would assume, would be diminished generally because of the high cost and, let's say, lack of viability of a lot of dishes for takeaway, like just surviving the trip in your car. We'll see how 2020 further influences the dining customs and rituals.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that kind of brings us to exactly the thing that I hope to wrap up with here, which is that, you know, so many people are asking us right now how they can recreate Italian experiences at home or, you know, replace some of the wonderful trips and travel that they had planned with another analogous experience without the travel component. And, you know, one of the things that I often try to do for myself and for friends and family is once in a while, not every day, obviously, even under pandemic conditions, but to punctuate your time, especially if you're mostly staying home or if you're working because you have to go out to work and you are having long weeks and you don't get to have the kind of social relaxation elements that normally make those weeks pleasurable. You know, creating a full meal in this way at home allows a regular dinner to feel special because it forces you to take the time to both appreciate the things that you've created to eat and to appreciate whoever is there with you, even if it's the person you've been locked down with for a very long time or the couple of people who you've made a decision to spend, to share intimate space with. You know, if you get some good products from one of the many places that we have suggested to you or ordering from Italy directly and create a series of courses that come out one at a time, slowly taking breaks in between, allowing yourself the time to prepare them and not feel like everything has to be ready when you sit down, allowing yourself to digest them and talk about what you liked or didn't like, and then finding that the meal has an introduction, a kind of narrative body and a conclusion. It will really open up the whole experience. And, you know, it's not the same as going out to your favorite restaurant or flying to a new country and experiencing that culture in person. But these are the things that are actually the ephemeral bits of culinary culture that are worth looking at and also trying to create ourselves in whatever spaces we have. And I think that can really be a kind of salve for the soul at this time also.
Yeah, highly recommend planning a delicious parade of Italian courses. Maybe pick a region. Explore the foods of that region with the people in your pod. I'm going to assign that to you. I want you to make a Sicilian meal for your people. Assign someone to be the dishwasher because, you know, you're going to have a lot of plates if it's all those courses. Get ready for like a lot of sugar at the dessert course. Prepare yourself physically and emotionally for that. And enjoy, and then write to us and let us know how it went.
I love that idea, Katie. I actually think that we should throw that up. When we drop this episode, we'll put it out with a call to have everybody make their meal and then show us their antipasto to dolce creations. I'd love to share that. I think it would be something that would also do the work that we're talking about of creating community through food. So that's a firm confirmation of your homework assignment and of the fact that you'll also get some updates from me and Katie about what we're eating and how we're making sure to keep it real, even when we're feeling like maybe we're just going to have a bag of chips and drink a beer and go to sleep at 8 o'clock.
I mean, 8 o'clock, it's so late.
I know, with daylight savings.
It's been dark for 3 hours. It's rough. I don't know. Who am I?
All right. Well, with that, Katie, let's go menu plan. Make sure that neither one of us falls asleep before 6 p.m. and remind our golosi that they can find us on Instagram. I'm at Dr. Caligari's Cabinet. Where are you?
At Katie Parla. And if you need any, like, okay, this is a double homework assignment. Just buy like Mary Taylor Simetti's books, cook through those. You got your awesome Sicilian menu planned and lots of cool dessert ideas as well.
buona cena, buona serata e ci sentiamo la prossima volta su Gola.
Se sentimo presto, ragazzi.